specialized in family and youth therapy, but the thing, but I'm interested in developmental psychology, and that's where you learn that. And also, I'm interested in families as a whole, because the thing is that when you do couple therapy, you're fixing a whole family. Everyone's got patterns.
Yeah.
And so, well, going back to what I said before, Murray Bowen said that you're better off just finding the person in the family who's most interested in changing.
Yes.
In becoming differentiated.
Having the ripple effect.
Well, once one person becomes differentiated, first what happens, he says, is the others all say, we want you the way you were before. And so one person, when they try to become more interdependent, there's a rebellion. And so therefore his idea was...
Interdependent?
Well, you need to look up the concept of differentiation from Murray Bowen. It's interdependent, yeah. It's like not fusing together. It's being able to, say with siblings, it's being able to resolve emotional stuff. And siblings go through a lot of emotional stuff, like family members die, or there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that happen. And the old patterns keep going until people become differentiated, where they can just work out their emotional stuff peacefully, which is the same thing you're trying to achieve in couple therapy. Because going back to John Gottman, one of the things he talks about is he says that 63% of relationship problems are perpetual. In other words, they'll never be resolved. 63 is a really big number. Yeah. So that means 30% are resolvable.
Yes.
Right? So, but the other 63%, you're going to have to talk about without fighting, because they're not going to resolve. So you have to become differentiated to give the space and the kind of improved communication you need to do to actually talk about those issues and get some kind of understanding on them. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
63%. And the other thing in his method that's really good, he says that in couples, you have to have, like, we do little interactions all the time, even, do you want to do this, or shall we do this, or, you know, or can we talk about this now, or all of those little things. You need 4 positives to 1 negative, or the relationship breaks down. So you need, and he says part of the reason that is because 1 negative, like when we're negative, it's normally loud or angry.
Okay.
Right? Or silent treatment. Do you know what I mean? The 4 horsemen. So, you know, the negative stuff's normally tied up with the whore, more with one of the horsemen, so they have more impact than positive things. So you need to increase your positive communication behaviours. And these are about communication. So a good example is, you know, like a normal couple thing, one person's been at home cleaning up and the other person comes home and just starts on something, right? It's something that's been triggering in the past. They know it's triggering and they just start on it.
Right.
And then the reaction starts. And basically, you know, there's not that much individualized in couple issues. Like, people are basically doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're triggered, they're getting angry, they're getting, you know, going into the silent treatment. And, you know, they're doing all of those things. And there's nothing what's amazing about it is they're all more or less the same things, unless there's some serious domestic violence. But in the literature, it says most family violence or arguing is pretty equal. There's a word for it. Anyway, it's in counselling they use it, which means it's something like normal, because both people are just, and, you know, a lot of studies have come out, the Dunedin study in New Zealand, and one of my lecturers at uni, it's basically girls and boys also start the fighting equally.
Yeah, okay.
And that's really important, because it's not always men doing this. This is an equal thing. And
my brain would have assumed it was women doing it more.
My lecturer assumed that, but when you go to the data, it's not.
Okay.
And see, so there's a disconnect here between the social discussion and the couple discussion.
Right.
Right, because there's a bias there that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And you said it spontaneously, so that means that's inbuilt, that it's always the guy's fault. But when you come down to it...
No, no, I said I believed it was the girl's fault.
Oh, right.
I said the opposite. No, no, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, not
I remember
many
going in
that.
And having it. Yeah, I went in for a treatment with one of my mates, Norm, like 10 years ago. And we'd had this bizarre thing happen where, and this was totally weird, but Jay and I were doing dance lessons. I went in for a dancing lesson, and for the first time ever, we had split dancing lessons. So Jay got some cheeky babe in a black dress, skinny little, you know, gorgeous instructor. I got Mario, who was a lovely guy, but I was watching Jay dancing with this cheeky babe. By the time we got in the car, I could barely speak to him the whole way home. He had done nothing wrong. I was fully aware he had done nothing wrong.
Right, he'd
been married 25 years, you know, and it was the most bizarre thing. So I booked in with Norm the next morning, and I told Norm this story, and Norm laughed at me and he said, "You bloody women. You know, I'm sure you're to blame for 90% of the problems out there." And I said, "Hey, I'm fully aware this is crazy."
Well, I don't
and
think
I knew it. I knew
I don't, I don't think that. I think there's sadly there's a lot of very aggressive men out there. And it's sad that people aren't being taught consent in a holistic way.
Right.
So that they you know, because the problem is those things are tied up with violence and sex, and they're really awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know what to do. One of the best things I heard recently was Esther Perel said that she's talking about, because she, Esther Perel, I really like as a couples theorist, because she talks about modern eroticism and that the old systems for marriage aren't working to keep us alive and romantically involved over a long period. So she's come up with a new system, which is really beautiful. And everyone's scared to talk about sex too. And so, you know, because of, oh, you're talking about, but that's what everyone's doing it all the time, and probably not as much as they want to, especially with married people. Because she says, before we get married, we have lots of different partners, and we're faithful to all of them. And she goes, then we get married, and now no one's having sex with anyone. And she goes, as a couple counsel, that's what her experience is like. Right. And so, but she made this beautiful definition. She said, one of the problems is people look at sex as something they do, right? And she goes, but really the proper way to look at it is the place you go to with someone else.
Right.
And by looking at it in that frame, it actually takes away, I'm doing this to someone, which is objectifying.
Right.
I'm going to a place with this person. We go to this place together, right? And then it becomes it becomes a beautiful description. And that's what I said was trying to get to before, that people in their lives haven't, you know, learning from their families and learning to this, like a concept like that's really helpful.
Yeah, totally.
In couples counselling and in your own home life. Like I said that to my wife and she goes, that's beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what it is, isn't it, right? Except the objectifying I'm doing something is a different thing entirely.
Yeah.
So that's more of a holistic framing. I'd look at it like that.
Yeah, no, that's great. I know we don't have much time left, but I just sort of also wanted to chat about Wim Hof breathing, because I know you're a huge fan of Wim Hof. So you've mentioned breathing, you've mentioned giving the limbic brain time to breathe and time to reset and get back to a space of thinking. You're a massive fan of Wim Hof. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, I'm a fan of Wim Hof, but as you said in the beginning, I've been doing yoga and meditation of different modes for 35 years. And I do daily practice. So Wim Hof, I do for the last year and a half, I've been doing 3 to 5 days a week Wim Hof. And what I experience, though, it's different for everybody.
Yes.
And I get a really big DMT release when I do it.
DMT?
And there's a whole visual thing.
What's DMT?
Well, DMT's so Wim Hof breathing releases a whole bunch of, what's interesting about Wim Hof is that his method was studied by so some scientists did some research on the effects of his method.
Right.
And it won the Nobel Prize for Medicine and Physiology, I think, in 2019. So, because it does a whole range of things. It produces wider red blood cells, produces maybe flexible blood cells for your veins.
Blood vessels, yep.
Blood vessels. It corrects genetic anomalies.
Right. Sort of chatted for people with long COVID, like this is the sort of thing that might actually help them to get over it faster. Because
it could do, but I'll just say something about that in a sec. It's definitely worth looking up Wim Hof scientific study.
Right.
Because I can't, like a lot of things we talk about, I can't really, but if you hear the names of the people I'm using, look up their work.
Yes.
Which I recommend anyway. People should look up, you know, it's like in couples counselling. I mean, because I've done couples, I've done family counselling, I've done personal counselling, and you've got to keep these things up. You've got to keep educating yourself. And in the modern world, we have to be lifelong learners, but we also have to be lifelong differentiationists. Do you know what I mean? We've got to always like reestablish that, because it's so easy to get stuck in patterns with people where your relationships become fused in some way. And it's like, oh, that didn't happen before. And then you've got to, you work to get your boundaries into back into a place that's healthy.
Exactly. And I think people don't take into account every big change we have in our life. You then have to rebond your relationships in that new spot. So even the last 2 years, people working from home a lot more. How like there's never been a time in my lifetime when so many people have spent so much time in their houses with their kids and their partners there. And this has been a real challenging time for many people. It's great for lots of people, more family time, but it's also been incredibly challenging because if you don't have those relationships and enough computers and enough, you know, like it's everything. It's a real challenge.
Well, normally work life has been taking over that. And it's funny, it got automatically flipped so that all the family got together and they're not used to doing those other roles. But a lot of them started improving their role scope just by being forced into the situation. It became a good thing because a lot of people don't want to go back to work.
Yeah.
They're hoping the COVID conditions stay for a long time because they don't want to go back to work. They'll be supporting all of the mandates so they can stay home, because most of my neighbours are now, they get to take their kids to school. They're all working at home. They get to be at home all day and do it, work any time of day. And I think some people might be looking forward to going back to the office.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? So sort of every big change, you have a baby. That's a whole different relationship. Instead of two, there's now three. You have another baby. It's not three, it's now four. Every big, you get a dog, you get a cat. Anything that you change in a family relationship, everyone then needs to rebond and rewire and reformulate their beliefs about the family unit again.
Right, sure. But you are, I just want to say you are right on that. It's like people having that going to work thing taken away from them really does affect them. Because a lot of people, they were spending more time at work than at home.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do. If you take out sleeping, they're spending more time relating to people than they are at home.
Yeah.
So their work colleagues are getting more time than their kids in most cases.
Yes.
Right. So, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's what you need to do. And so, but that has had a big effect on people.
Yeah.
And people who are just holding it together emotionally have really suffered during that, I think, in families, because people only hold it together. A lot of people, you know, it's hard to get on well in a family, because the divorce rate, I think, is something like 50% or something. That's what they say in counselling, and that's like, it's not a very good success rate, because most of the people are breaking up because they can't get on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which is, some of it's, you know, people do have affairs, people do all sorts of betrayal and all sorts of things, but still, things can be repaired, and you've got kids and you want to, like, you know, it's good, you know. It's become to such a point where you can't even say, oh, it's good with the parents to stay with both kids, because they want to have equality of families. And except the fact is that the data is the data. So, and I'm not going to comment on it, but it is what it is.
So what's the data? The data is that kids are better with two parents, yes?
Yeah, but in counselling you try to do equality of families, and you do that because you need to empathise with people. So it's kind of needs to be like that in a way.
Yeah.
Although the second marriages have a lower success rate than the first ones.
Right.
And so basically, you know, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of, like, I was reading up some Australian statistics the other day, and girls who self-harm, four times as likely if there's a step-parent in the house.
Right.
And because, you know, and most custody rates are, I think 80% of custody rates after divorce are mother completely with some, and then a 10% are called shared. But of that 10% of shared, it's not 50-50. It's mostly 60-40 or 70-30. So basically, that's the primary home for the kids, and the step parent will be a stepdad, I'd say.
Yeah.
And so setting that, and so when you separate with the, you know, the kid's dad, even if they, because these days it's like abusive, 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 and it's like, well, the parents are saying that, but it's like Esther Perel says, and they go, Esther Perel goes, yeah, so this happens, they break up, and everyone goes, the kids are happy now, and she goes, no, they're not. She goes, I counsel all day. She goes, they say that, but that's not true. Do you know what I mean? Right. Because the dad's the kid's protector. Unless he's abusive, he is their protector.
Yeah.
Right? And the new guy isn't their protector in most cases, in some, you know, like, it's just that there's some things, there's some ways they've gone about describing these things in the name of equality that is sweeping things like loss and grief under the rug.
Yeah.
Like, because the loss and grief, and the data's on that, of divorce, for kids of divorce, and so many biographies you read, like I just happened to be reading online Edward Snowden's biography the other day, and he's going through his childhood, and then the divorce happened, and his life was changed forever. And you read that in so many biographies, their life's changed forever, and they don't see their dad anymore, and it's like, it's a really sad thing.
Yeah.
There was no trauma there, but it's still really sad and really life-changing, and that's why I believe in the grief and trauma informed therapy, because really in more cases that's what's really there, not trauma. There's loss. And even when there's trauma, like I've had some trauma in the past, except in my case it was because of what an institution was doing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And even though you're traumatized, you're actually sad about not being able to resolve a problem.
Yeah.
Right, that's all. And that's a grief thing. And then when you get to the bottom layer, you realize, oh, that made me really sad. And because the trauma symptoms come up, like, you know, stress, overthinking, anger, you know, all of those things that happen, standard set of trauma symptoms, you know, with you've got to tick the boxes in every category. And then it's like, and then you go, but then you go through the counseling process and you can fix it really quickly. And you go, there's another reason I wanted to become a counselor, because I go, that's really amazing. And so a further step, so to bring this all together with the identity practice that I'm developing, is that when you work out all your roles, you actually work out each role and then you measure them. So where you are at the moment and what your ideal is.
Right.
And what I was saying before about having stability to keep balance in a system is that when we have all of our roles, we're self-aware of all the roles we have in our life. Like that might be, like I'll give you an example. Like I'm a brother, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, do you know what I mean? A lover, I'm a these are things that, and then I'm a gardener, I'm a you know, I'm a household engineer, I'm a counselor, I'm an artist. And so there's all types of things, and you know, when you have all your roles in front of you, and you can see which ones, you know, just say if you want to look at it, you can measure it in different ways, but you know, I measure them with numbers. So five's like competent. Like, for example, as a counselor, if I do that role, I'm allowed to practice before I qualify. You don't have need any qualifiers. So I can call myself a five, say. And when I graduate, then I'll be able to say I'm a five, right? But maybe I want to be an eight, you know. So five is okay, good, qualified. But say seven's good, nine's great, 10's awesome. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And under that, if just so I'm a bad, I'm doing under that substandard or learning. So I might be a three, but I'm a student, so that's okay.
Yes.
I just started. And so when you lay out people's roles, a lot of people have got highly developed roles already. Like they're already a good mum. Like if they look at mum, they'll go, yeah, I'm seven. Yeah, I'm happy being a seven. You know, no, I don't want to be awesome. I can't do everything perfectly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, and so when you work out roles, you actually find all of these things that because people aren't very self-reflective, and especially with the way things are these days, they find all these things that they're really good at and roles that they've really highly developed, right? And they're their positives.
Yes.
Right? And they're not being aware of them, because when people have a problem, they're just thinking of the problem.
Yeah.
But they're forgetting about the whole positive side which is a joy-informed therapy.
How wonderful. Exactly. Right. Because so much counselling is about the horrible stuff and, you know, it's like pulling teeth and...
Right.
And it's that, creating...
And you can do that stuff, except I'll give you an example. Like, I had a melanoma about 15 years ago, and I was doing family counselling at the time, just, you know, and because it was causing problems, and I didn't have any future picture. All my global goals were just, I couldn't even think of them because I thought I was going to die. I had no future orientation at all. It was all just in the current here perspective, getting through each day. And there were no global goals because I thought I was going to die, so what was the point in thinking of the future? And I've just noticed that future-orientated counselling is, like, really powerful because you're talking about people. Because I was reading one really interesting author called Ankie Snoke. I can't if that's got it right, but she's Dutch. And she quoted in her one of her essays that from another source, I can't remember. But generally we think our future person is more authentic than our current person.
Right.
Right. And so because
our future person has got more things in place that allow us to live our best life, or like, what's the thinking behind that?
That was from studies. So I don't know, but I just read that and I went, wow, that's really amazing.
Huh, interesting.
And then it becomes how can you project your future self? Right. So it becomes so our current self, we've got a problem, but what's the future self look like? That's really helpful because that future self is a goal. It's an ideal.
Yeah.
It's a value. And all of a sudden you're looking at a particular role to say, I'll give you an example. What's the role that you'd like to look at? So I am something that's anything.
Successful podcaster.
Okay, so if you look at successful podcaster, so at the moment you've been doing some other work on YouTube for a while.
Absolutely. I've got 15,200 glorious subscribers.
Okay, so currently you look at yourself now, and if you say, I am a podcaster, so podcaster, right?
Yes.
And currently, in the present, I am a number, what would you call yourself? Say a five. Oh,
say three.
Oh, you think you're a three? It doesn't matter whether you rate yourself high or lower in self-assessment. And what would you like to be?
Oh, I want to be a 10. Give it to me.
You want to be an awesome podcaster.
I want to be an awesome podcaster, absolutely.
Okay. So if you say you're three now and then you want to be a 10, right, there's like seven steps in there.
Okay.
Right, so but then you can automatically think, oh, if I was a 10 podcaster, what would that look like? And what sort of steps might I need to do? So just by doing that simple process, you're actually working out the distance between the present introverted idea and then extroversion means moving towards. So just by defining that, you're now moving towards it, even with your thoughts. Oh, what would that be like? And then just by doing that, you already know some steps.
And because, yes, obviously I'm very green with technology and I know there's stuff that I can...
Right, so you start to see the steps that get you up to there just by forming the picture.
Yes.
And also the other thing is that, so that future picture, it, so you want to, like that, that is like, a, so that's like, a, because it's an ideal, it's like a goal, it's also like a rudder.
Yes.
So when you do goal setting really well, it stops you from distracting behavior, it keeps you on track. It's a rudder, it's a future picture. And that overcomes the thing you said earlier about what people were talking about. You were saying that people wanted to insist on everyone being atheists.
Yes.
Right. If I was going to take an issue with that, it's that they're presenting people from projecting future pictures. Because if, just say, I'll give you an example, just say, so I belong to a particular religion with a particular idea of God and a particular idea of what might happen after death when you go through death.
Yes.
It's like I can manifest a future picture to them. It may not be that accurate, but just that manifesting future picture, right, in a particular circumstance, I mean, that makes you feel really good.
Yeah.
Because Esther Perel says everyone should have a secret garden. And so, you know, we want to cultivate our internal garden, you know, as well. And that's where our future pictures start thinking, that it's all this internal thing.
Yeah.
And to say the other thing to tie that up is that by having all your roles set out in front of you, you can see all of those positives that you're already good at. Now, yeah. Now let's look at a role of yours that you're already, like, really good in. What's something that you can say I'm already a 7 or an 8?
I'm a master naturopath.
Okay, so you're a what? Give yourself a 7 or an 8? Yeah,
absolutely.
And you're happy being an 8?
Absolutely.
Right. So there's an example of something that is stability in your system.
Yes.
Right, that's a stable factor. And because stability, being aware of the stable factors, when you want to change, they're your stable base that keeps the thing balanced. Because when change happens, if you want to change, if you want to work on an addiction, or if you want to work on anxiety, or if you want to work on differentiating, you know that the rest of the family is going to rebel a little bit, right? So you've got to be strong, and that's where you need your, because they call it congruent. That's congruent. I'm a 7, I'm an 8, I want to be an 8. That's like, yes. You know what I mean? So the things you've mastered in your life, they sit there as your achievements right in front of you, and you see your deficit role that you've got a problem with, and you're like, it becomes this workable object amongst many better things.
Yes.
You know, I know that's harder for people with, you know, really harder, like, life difficulties, because some people, it's hard to pick up the joy. You know, I mean, the joy informed from their past, because they get so focused on the difficulties from the past, and the because the problem with past difficulties is trauma. There's like shame, and you know, it invokes all of these. It brings up things in the present, and some
and
of those
people
things,
still have those past traumas in their present. So abusive family members who are still abusive family members, and you have the choice for some people of just cutting your family off.
But cutting off's just as bad.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Cutting off isn't a differentiated position. Okay. Bowen talks about that. Cutting off is still a problem. You want to be able to, just as in marriages, being able to talk about things in a calm way and staying calm with your family.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Except the thing is that you know, because I've experienced in my family life that it is possible, like, to hardly ever fight and argue, to... like, it's actually possible. I remember reading that in this book called Breaking the Cycle by Paul Friedman. He goes, all this is possible. And I remember we're looking at ourselves going, no, it's not. And then we worked on it and it was. And I'm like, gee, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Vicarious joy. You know, so vicarious suffering, you know, people in frontline, they can get very traumatized. But if you work on the, because one of my lecturers, he said that to me, he's Alan Richardson. He said this thing that he goes, when you're doing couples therapy, you get to see improve in front of your eyes. And he goes, that's vicarious joy.
Right.
Right? Vicarious. You actually get to enjoy that with them.
Yes.
And he was he'd spent some time in India. And I went up and looked, I'm like, how does he get that? And when you look at the Sanskrit words for empathy, right, we always hear about the Buddhist idea, you know, on the suffering of others. And yes. That was, and one of those words is karuna. And then there's another word that means sharing the joy of others. So that's vicarious joy. And that's, and so by that, and that's why when couples are fighting, they're not getting the vicarious joy.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is what you need to actually not become burned out, because too much vicarious suffering. So for example, people get vicarious trauma from someone being traumatized near them, or people who are counselors who do the really hardcore mental health stuff, from, you know, abused women, abused children, they get burned out, right? And one of the things about burnout is your whole belief system changes. You know, different to post-traumatic growth, but they just can, like, just not believe in anything anymore. You know, so,
yeah.
And that's not vicarious joy. But the vicarious joy, so the more and more we can share joy with others and with our partner, that's what starts happening when you get more better partner relationship with your partner, right? It's like it's just more joy together.
Yeah, yeah.
So joy-informed, joy informed therapy, I think, is future orientated,
You can't make that happen, but by releasing the old stress and allowing the future to be forefront of your mind as opposed to not even being thought of, that allows the brain to start feeling more safe and secure. So more feel-good hormones are going to start.
They will, but you can't do one without the other. You still have to work on the because there's a – I was reading a study the other day because I knew this was a phrase, but I didn't know they actually studied it. But there's a relationship between depression related to past things and anxiety related to future things. So the thing is about that is that we're nearly out of time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so – anyway, we could do more another time. But the reason that differentiation is so important is because differentiated people are hopeful people. And the reason that they're hopeful is because they've learned how to actually set a goal and achieve it. And so counsellors who use hope, their hope can be more powerful than the client's hope. Because as a hopeful person, they're used to actually solving problems that actually work. Whereas a lot of people, they have wishful thinking.
Right.
And it's like, and even though they will make goals about that, it doesn't work.
Okay.
Because it's not connected. So another thing about hope that I've been studying, another one, I had some good lectures, wrote a book on hope, and it's that hopeful people can actually connect future goals that actually work. Whereas a lot of people are stuck in, in magical thinking or all types of things where they make these goals, but they don't work out. Do you know what I mean? Right. It's like a wishful
thinking. They're not doing anything towards it. They're not focused on it.
No, and bad counselling can be like that, bad couples counselling. Like they try to, I had a friend the other day. She said she'd left a counsellor that she'd been seeing for 10 years. And I go, why not? And she goes, because there wasn't any goal.
Yeah.
And the whole point of counselling is working with people's goals, finding out what are their goals, not my goals, what are their goals and their values. They've already got the internal resources. They've just forgotten about them because they've become usually so busy that they've forgotten. And it's usually just busy. It's not any willful thing. They've just forgotten about the things that keeps them spiritually balanced, which might be just doing meditation and breathing every day.
Yes.
But the one thing I say about Wim Hof is that you have to be careful with the vaccine thing, because if people have some of the side effects from the vaccines and also the disease itself is like myocarditis.
Yes.
And you have to rest.
So you might actually pump the heart faster.
Doing Wim Hof might. You should definitely do that on case by case basis. But for all healthy people,
functional medicine doctor, right, so someone who knows how to.
But that's important with some of the current issues people might be having around the disease, or because an Israeli study came out last week about the incidence of that, and so it's like people have to be dealt with
myocarditis.
Yeah, they have to be careful with that about breathing. And if they do have that, it mightn't be very massive numbers, but they've found that there's more than they thought. And so people with that have to be careful, because some people who had myocarditis they were doing exercise and some people died, I thought.
Even going back 5-10 years ago, I remember I had a few clients at the time who were triathletes who had viral myocarditis. And at the time they were looking at people who were elite athletes having on average 6 upper respiratory tract infections per year.
They had a higher rate to the normal population.
Yes, because their body's running on adrenaline so much.
Right.
Because they're getting up
they wear themselves out
in the morning. Yeah, they're getting up early in the morning. They're doing huge amounts of training. If they're not looking after their bodies as well as potentially they could, then it becomes an issue where they're putting more damage to their body than they're repairing their body.
Right.
So therefore, it was studies with things like, say, echinacea and astragalus and some really good herbs and what that could do for these long-term infections, and the infections go down and the protection to the heart. But the problem was
that's an inflammation thing.
Well, viral myocarditis.
Itis means inflammation.
Myocarditis is inflammation of the heart, and it's often the immune system attacking the heart. Pericarditis is the whole heart being inflamed.
Oh, that's out of my realm.
Yeah, so basically, and both of them have a higher risk factor for strokes and heart attacks and things like that.
Right.
So at the time, we were using things like coenzyme Q10 to support the cardiac tissue. You know, there's all sorts of things, you know, magnesium and stem enhance and all sorts of bits and bobs from a naturopathic perspective. Mm-hmm. And then people can actually repair the heart tissue, which was
But with the COVID thing, from a counselling perspective, so many things have come up in studies, like, for example, grief.
Yes.
Normal grief circumstances that people were normally managing are now turning into complicated grief, which is normally fairly rare. So there's a lot of issues like that that have become stronger, or preclinical symptoms where people have anxiety that, and they're not really sure, or people are depressed, you know, just because they don't have the normal things that they're going to.
Yeah.
But that might pick up soon. And
And I do know just recently in Northern Territory, when they shut down the territory, and there was people being in that Howard Springs, it's sort of like one of the camps that they put people who were unwell or who had the positive test. And I remember one of the girls there, she's someone who runs every single day. That's her life. And she was put in there, and she wasn't even allowed out onto the veranda. And she was asked if she could at least come out and, you know, sort of walk around the compound. And she wasn't allowed. And the offer that they gave her were anti-anxiety drugs.
Right.
You know, so you're allowed to have as many drugs as you want, but you weren't allowed fresh air or exercise.
I don't know if they, you know, counsellors don't diagnose or have, but I just think, I suppose I wonder why they give them that.
Well, but there was a study in Australia about...
It can't hurt in the short term. But the problem is that those things don't end up being short-term. They're meant to be short-term correctional.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that'd be good for a month while you're stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But people are really affected by all of this stuff. And they're not even sure how to re-put their life together back, because they can't predict what's going to happen. So people are having trouble making all types of goals.
Yeah.
And they don't even know if what they thought their life would be is going to be like is going to come back.
But I think this is where hope comes in, because if we, like, I feel like I may never get to travel overseas again. I just feel like that. It doesn't mean I can't hope for that. You know, it's like, because
wishful thinking and hope, there's an important distinction.
Yeah.
You want to have your ideals actually true. So, because I'll give you an example. If it's wishful thinking and not hoping, and you want to say, you know, whatever that role is, you want to make it here.
So I am a traveller.
Okay, but you don't want to make it something that's not possible.
Right.
Because there won't be any satisfaction or vicarious joy in the process, right, because we actually get joy from reaching the goal.
Right. I should just say travelling in general and sort of leave out the word overseas, and it doesn't matter if I go to Mullaney or Kingscliff or, you know.
And it probably doesn't matter.
Keep it attainable. Yeah.
And, you know, whatever it is, the world is the way it is. Do you know what I mean? What's happening is the way it is, and that's what we're working with.
Yeah.
And so it's important to make goals that are tangible, because in narrative therapy it's really important. So because we're in the middle of the story, right? And in narrative therapy, you'll have somebody come with a problem, and they do this thing called restoring, right? But that restoring has to be trueable. It has to be something, goals that are achievable, and not just, like, you know, because a lot of people with depression say, I want to do this and I want to be that and I want to do this, but they never do anything because their agency is so blocked. They just
agency, that's the word. Agency. That's the word, yes. I knew we'd get there, David.
We can do a whole session on that.
Yeah, I think we should.
Agency and self-control are interrelated.
Yeah.
Right, and so working with true roles, because that's that thing again, that the idea that we believe our future self is more authentic.
Yes.
So the story towards that ideal has to be authentic. And if it's wishful thinking, it's not.
Okay.
You see that?
Yeah.
And so the agency has to connect with the goal, and that's hopeful thinking. Wishful thinking, I want to do this, and except actually you can't do it anyway. There's not a free way to get there.
Yeah.
So with something I do with those types of roles is that if just say normally I'm an 8 traveler, like here's the problem with this thing. I'm normally an 8 traveler and I want to be an 8. And now actually what's happening, I'm a 3.
Yes.
Right? And you were getting a whole bunch of joy from that.
Yes.
But because of the regulations, you're not getting that joy. Not only that, but your numbers dropped.
Yeah.
But that's really disappointing, right? So when I do roles, if I do something like just say something that happens when people have a baby.
Yes.
They've got all of these roles that have got numbers in, like, and one of them might be sex life, it might be 7, and then they have the baby and that's 3.
If they're lucky.
And so what you got to do on the left side, you write 7 but 3 at the moment temporarily, right? And then you work towards, and then you want to, because that's a problem. So many people have that trouble in marriage. But then you want to work to a realistic new number.
Yeah.
You might never get that 7 or 8 back, but you might. Yeah. It depends how good you are. It depends how much you're prepared to learn the art of relationships.
Yeah.
Because what we learned in our family upbringing, is it really that good? It's the sex education we receive now. I mean, really.
No, it's probably not where you're supposed to get your...
So we can learn much, much better ways. And the ways are available. And what I see is the best theory coming out isn't really disseminating into society, because at this age I've seen so many people around me divorce and everyone understood what I was doing. So they'd all, people had talked to me about it. And basically I see that people didn't try very hard.
Yeah.
They didn't try very hard at all. They tried people who broke up in their marriage. So many people that I saw, they kept worrying about money the whole time.
Well, I find
and
there
they,
are
and
so
especially
many-
their share, they kept worrying about the kids and but they didn't spend any time trying to improve their relationship much at all.
Yeah. And I find that most women, especially middle-aged women, they have just spent so long doing the whole mother thing, the second job, the, looking after the whole household and everything, and they don't feel, they often, when you ask them, and I know you'll have found this as well, when you say, well, what do you want in this relationship? And most of them can't see the relationship lasting another 5 years. That's probably 90% of the women that I see, because it's been such a poor relationship for so long. They simply have lost their hope with that relationship.
But what happens in that is that, I could say a lot about this, but the thing is that I'm unhappy and it's your fault.
That's what's going on.
That's not what's really going on. I'm unhappy because I'm actually not doing the things that bring me joy.
Russell Brand did exactly that the other day. He said,
it's not getting a new boyfriend.
Yeah.
Which is what they're doing. So, because they say, oh, the relationship won't last for 5 years. Yeah. And then they leave, right? Because, I've seen around me at least 50% leave.
Yeah.
And then, except what do they leave? They leave into a new relationship. And this is the girls pushing this in most cases. I don't see many boys having affairs these days. I see the girls leaving and getting with a new guy. And they've got the kids, and now they've got the kids with this new guy that the kids like sometimes and usually don't. And so, but we've got to be equality to families. Except the thing is that Esther Perel says, if you're feeling dead in your relationship and you feel like having an affair, you've got to work on the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can bring it back. You're in love. Remember, we're in love and we like made marriage vows and, we felt all these things. They're still underneath. They were still underneath, but we were doing all these other roles that made us feel good then that we're not doing now. And it's my fault that I'm not happy.
Okay. So what would the top 3 things that people can do in their life today that will just start helping them feel a bit more joy? What would you think?
People could spend time. The thing is, all of the best psychology theorists are writing books.
Right.
And whether that's on family relationships or any type of therapy, They've all got book launches. You can listen to them online.
Right.
So listen
to amazing therapists online. The ones you've been talking about, obviously Esther Perel.
Oh, well, in family counselling, Esther Perel and the Gottmans.
The Gottmans.
John and Julie Gottman.
Yep.
Well, any of their stuff, look it up.
Yeah.
Because psychoeducation, I've learned that actually we have to re-educate ourselves.
Yeah.
The way that people are doing, the way I was thought relationships would work, it actually didn't work.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of people can't afford counselling. So sure, see a counsellor and a good one, find a good one that does a good job. And do that, but psychoeducate yourself. The best people are like Dan Siegel in relationships. He did a thing called Mindsight, and Esther Perel, John Gottman, and family therapy, Murray Bowen. The videos of these amazing people online, and you can just watch it, and it's free.
Yes,
and you can watch
learn some breathing techniques, getting yoga.
You can look up. There's so much. Everything's available online. There's a free tutorial for nearly everything. I mean, there's an amazing resource online where you can get so much help. And not biased people, go to the like stars of the industry, you know, and the few that I mentioned there, they're really effective. They've got really effective methods.
Fabulous.
And the more information you can get outside your counsellor, the better the counselling work. The more you engage, the better outcome you'll get.
Yeah. And at some stage you'll have a workshop up and running with how to get your...
I'll start practicing in the next few weeks. I'm just getting some of my business planning done at the moment.
Yes. Yeah. And then you'll be predominantly doing online consultations with people?
Probably, but I've also got a couple of offers of sharing rooms with people. So I think I've got both up my sleeve, but I'm finishing uni at the end of this semester to get my qualification. And then, but I'll start before then, just setting up, because the goal setting I've done with people's roles isn't counselling.
Yes.
So it doesn't have the same requirements.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's just because you can do it, I can do business or personal version. So it's not counselling. So I can do that just now because it's my own thing.
Because it's yours. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I've been watching you develop that over the last few years. It's amazing.
Oh, thanks, Madonna.
Really lovely, really lovely process. Well.
Well, when I get that organised, we'll have another one.
Yes.
And we can, like, introduce it.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'd love to. I can imagine that would make a really good workshop.
Right.
You know,
an
interactive workshop with people who want to be online and be part of that, you know.
Well, hopefully I've got my hope layers worked out for it.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, as a business, because I think if it works out, like depends, you know, the market decides whether things are good or not.
Yeah.
And so if it's good, you know, it's got potential to be developed into different educational roles or because it's just a holistic way of self-awareness and being aware of all of our parts of ourselves and which parts need attention.
Yeah.
And we don't think of ourselves like that.
No, we don't. No, and I love the way that you described it, and I think probably anyone is going to be able to feel those areas in their life where they're just not quite, you know, putting themselves forward.
And the ones that are really working, which are creating their stability.
Yes, we forget.
When couples start fighting, they forget about their stable factors.
Yeah, funny. Mm. Interesting. Beautiful. Well, thank you, David. I'm sure we shall chat again soon.
Okay, good. Thanks, Madonna.
Have a fabulous day.
Really fantastic to chat.
Excellent.
You too.
Okay. Take care, everyone. See you again soon.
Okay, bye.